Let me see you get loose. Going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Happy Friday to each and every one of you. Another week in the books here in Berea, and it closes on a big note. The offensive and special team staffs for the Cleveland Browns have been filled out completely, and the team is named a defensive coordinator. Ray Horton is the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns for the second time. The last time he was here, the Browns ranked ninth in the league in total defense in 2013, the best finish since 1994. After finishing 23rd the prior year in Tennessee, he took them from 27th in total defense in his first year to 12th in total defense in his second year. Now, scoring defense is another matter, but Ray Horton has done a good job against the pass, number 7 overall last year in Tennessee, and hopes to do that here with the Cleveland Browns as well. Rounding out the staff on the offensive and special team sides, Pep Hamilton, the associate head coach offense, former offensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts when Andrew Luck led the league in passing. Al Saunders, who we've had a chance to catch up with a little bit, Mr. Wilhelm, a fine man, senior offensive assistant and wide receivers coach Kirby Wilson will be the running backs coach and the run game coordinator. Hal Hunter will be the offensive line coach, Mark Hudson, the assistant offensive line, Greg Seaman, tight ends coach, and Bob Saunders, offensive quality control. And then special teams, Sean Menega returns as the assistant, and Stan Watson returns as the special teams quality control coach again under Chris Tabor. So the offensive staff is filled out. The special team staff is filled out. And you got to like the fact that on this team for Hugh Jackson, there's some big names on this offensive staff. When you got Pep Hamilton, Al Saunders, and then Hugh Jackson, now three guys who have all called plays in the National Football League. Not a bad staff. And because it is Friday, we also have the key it here. Key it!
Greetings and salutations, America. My question is, Hugh Jackson calling the plays?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why there is not a traditional offensive coordinator. Pep Hamilton's the associate head coach of the offense. Al Saunders, the senior offensive assistant. And then Kirby Wilson is the running game coordinator.
I love the offensive staff. It'll be interesting to see who Ray Horton brings in with them. I know that he's great against the pass, but we've been so bad against the run. I hope he's staying up at night trying to figure out how we're going to stop the run.
You know what I like about this staff is, collectively, as you look at it, you know, Ray Horton didn't have to leave Tennessee, but chose to leave to come here to take this Browns job. Now, you know, there are rumors that he may bring an assistant or two from Tennessee and that staff with him that have experience in the AFC North. You look at Kirby Wilson, you know, the whole back and forth between Minnesota and waiting till his contract actually expires for him to be able to take an interview here, even though essentially the role is different. That means Minnesota wanted to keep him,
yep.
You know, and so we're taking a coveted coach away from another team. And then I think, you know, as you look at, you know, Al Saunders and his resume throughout the National Football League and what it is and what he stands for is going to be an amazing asset for this group as well.
Al Saunders has been in the NFL for 32 years. He's been a part of a playoff team 15 times, 5 division titles, 1 Super Bowl title. So basically half of the years in the NFL, he's been on a coaching staff that has taken its team to the playoffs. We know Pep Hamilton has worked with Andrew Luck and came from Stanford, done a very good job in the NFL. And then Kirby Wilson was the running backs coach in Pittsburgh for a long time and then was most recently the running backs coach for the Minnesota Vikings, where he worked with Adrian Peterson and, of course, a very, very good rushing thing. He has been 18 years as a running backs coach in the NFL. He has coached 5 running backs who rank in the top 30 for career rushing yards: Emmitt Smith, Curtis Martin, Edgerrin James, Thomas Jones, and Adrian Peterson. How about Thomas Jones? Top 30 all-time in rushing yards. That's amazing.
Impressive. What also is impressive about him, though, is when AP went down, I didn't feel like their running backs missed. I mean, they obviously weren't AP, but he had guys ready to play and ready to get in there, and that, to me, is important from coaching. The other thing with assistant coaches, and this is just from the outside looking in, Matt obviously knows more about this than I do, but I think almost as important as a head coach is the staff that comes with them. And I think that the staff that was here previous, you know, I mean, obviously nothing against the previous coaches, but I think our defensive coordinator was very over his head.
You had basically a drinking buddy as a defensive coordinator who had never done it in the NFL and probably never will again. And you had a first-time offensive coordinator who probably will be an offensive coordinator again, now the quarterback's coach for the Philadelphia Eagles, John DeFilippo. But this is all of a sudden, you talk about the experience on this staff, it's not even close.
Am I overrating the importance of assistants?
No, not at all.
It's the most important thing.
I mean, getting the guy that steers the ship, that captains the ship, and takes accountability for his staff, for his players, obviously that falls on his shoulders, and that's why he makes a bigger number than anybody else, right? But the relationships, and I've been in those locker rooms, you know, where, I mean, McCarthy, great coach, great guy, tough coach to play for, not the most engaging guy. He's an offensive mind. I was a defensive guy. You know, Norv was that offensive mind as well. You'll get a high, but to have any conversation with a head coach, you know, it's, I don't serve him any purpose other than do my job and work extremely well with my defensive coaches. But the amount of time that you spend with your position coach, you have to like him. The amount of time that you spend with your coordinator, he's the father figure that you check in with. Your head coach, it's like, if you're doing your job, you and your head coach are in good standing. If you're screwing up off the field or if you're not doing your job on the field is when the head coach starts to look down on you.
Was it the same with Marty, who was more of a defensive guy, or was he a little bit more involved?
Much more engaging, would sit in the defensive meetings, much more personable individual, you know, experienced head coach in his years in San Diego. So, you know, the bond was significantly closer with Marty Schottenheimer and him being a defensive guy than it was with Norv Turner. And even to reference Mike Singletary as a head coach, and I don't have, you know, he wasn't the greatest coach in the world, but being a defensive guy wasn't going to go out of his way to sit in offensive meetings because it's like speaking Spanglish to him. It's like, I'm going to sit in the D meetings and I'm going to do what I know.
Absolutely. And you likened it to me to kind of get to your point. When you think of a car, like the car is very important, but the tires, especially if you look at a race car, the tires are very important. Why? That's your only point of contact with the road. And you kind of laid out to me that those assistant and those position coaches are the real points of contact with the players. Those are the ones who really can develop and help a player grow or not be able to help get the best out of a player because they work with them more than anybody else.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because if players are displeased with something, you know, there might be a few guys on your roster that with those boisterous personalities and, you know, the big personalities that don't take, you know what, from nobody. They'll go talk to the head coach or they'll bring someone up to the coordinator, but your lifeline, you know, in connection to the head coach is via position coach. You take, this training camp's been too physical, we need a day off. You know, that overwhelming response in a locker room in your meeting rooms is to your position coach. The position coach then takes that to the coordinator. Coordinator says, well, who's saying that? Where is it coming from? And ultimately, they propose that to the head coach. It's not you go to the head coach and say, hey, this is what's going on. No, it's that, you know, the pipeline to the top.
And also, who was most responsible for taking, say, a young player and developing him? It is that position coach. And that
Absolutely.
Makes a big difference, wouldn't you say? Your
yeah.
time in San Diego
no doubt.
Was better because you had Minuski to work with.
For sure. It's because when, you know, when I want to watch more film or I want to stay on the field and do more of one drill that I struggle with that day or create a scenario to be able to walk through it to understand it with bodies instead of drawing it up on a whiteboard or seeing it on the film, your position coach and one or two other young players are the guys that stay on that field to create that scenario, to redo that drill for you to understand. The head coach doesn't stand there. Now, Norv Turner, who was also a play caller like Hugh Jackson will be, if it's the quarterback and a receiver and a route combination that they're trying to work on specific to the game plan, it's maybe a concept that Hugh and or the quarterback didn't grasp as well as they wanted to in practice because maybe it's the first time they've done this or thrown this route or this route combination, that they'll stand out there and he will oversee that because he's an offensive guy.
Right.
The same way if we introduce a new blitz, you know, and the defense coordinator or the defensive play caller happens to be the head coach, he's going to oversee that. You know, so if it's the other side of the ball, you know, Hugh's walking up the field and I'm walking through on the field with my position coach, i.e. the bond that you create and the time that you spend, similar to the way we talked yesterday after Sashi Brown was in with the new training staff. And
yep.
I'm not necessarily the training staff, but the new weight staff, you know, the new weight room guys. You spend an awful lot of time building a bond, hours of running and lifting and so on and so forth before you ever step on the football field.
Yeah. And that is what's important. And that's why we like the staff. We talked about the experience here. Pep Hamilton, offensive coordinator, two full seasons with the Colts. They won the division both times. They, in 2014, 4,894 passing yards. Andrew Luck led the NFL with 40 passing touchdowns. He was the offensive coordinator and quarterback coach at Stanford with Luck. He's been the quarterback's coach for Jay Cutler with the Chicago Bears and the assistant quarterback coach for the 49ers with Alex Smith. So he has been a guy that has been around this league for a long, long time. And Hugh Jackson saying, getting a coach like Pep Hamilton is going to be big for us. He'll be great for the quarterback's room. He's going to help mold that guy into being one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. That's our goal. We have to have a signal caller that can play at a high level. That's Pep's number one mission and mine too as we go through it. Al Saunders, we talked about 40 years in the NFL. You remember him with the greatest show on turf that year in 2000, 7,075 yards, 5,232 passing, and 540 points, still NFL records from the year 2000. That's amazing.
Which is amazing with the rule changes that have come into play since then, because that was before all the rules that the league put in play so Peyton Manning could get a Super Bowl.
He worked for Air Coryell in San Diego. He has been certainly around this league for a while. Kirby Wilson, 18 years coaching running backs. Hal Hunter, 34 years. In 2015, his line paved the way for Frank Gore to rush for the most yards for a Colts runner since 2007. He also spent 7 years in San Diego, Matt Wilhelm. What do you know about Hal Hunter?
I know Hal. Hal's a great guy. Great guy, very personable. And not so personable that he's going to build this amazing bond with players and it's going to be like they're a bunch of friends. He holds these guys accountable. It's not standing around, you know, talking through, walking through what we're trying to do. It's banging to get it executed the way it's going to be on a Sunday. And I love the hire. I thought he's, you know, the offensive line and the talent in Indianapolis hasn't been the greatest, but the job that they've done, you know, to protect Andrew Luck and to protect, you know, Matt Hasselbeck and so on and so forth, dealing with what he's had has been great. I know Jack Mehort is a friend of mine, former Buckeye, has nothing but great things to say, who's still, you know, starting, I think, at left or right tackle for the Colts. Nothing but great things to say about Hal Hunter, and obviously wishes him well.
Yeah, and he is here now, and no-nonsense tough. This is what Hugh Jackson has to say. He thinks this is a big coup for us. His dad was a former coach for the Browns, so a natural connection there. Tremendous football coach. He has fire, intensity, and he can teach fundamental football to a group of young men. And fire and intensity, what Wilhelm was getting at. Now, this is interesting. The tight ends coach wasn't a coach. He's been a coach 40 years coaching and scouting football. He's been a tight ends coach back in 2002. He has coached collegiately for 18 years. Here, a lot of it in Ohio, Miami of Ohio, Cincinnati, Akron. But he's been the last 12 years, he's been a scout for the Bengals.
Greg Seaman?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the gentleman who just walked by.
Oh, that's who just walked by?
It is.
How did you know that?
I saw his name tag.
Oh. So he is in with us. And then, of course, we know Sean Menega. And,
I
of course,
think
the
one
offensive
theme we're starting to see a little bit about Hugh Jackson's personality, while he's very gregarious with the media, there's not going to be any of this club pet anymore. I mean, this
is a no-nonsense.
This is
going to
be a real training camp. People are going to be knocking some heads, and I would expect that Matt Wilhelm is going to like this training camp a lot better.
I do too, and I think the one other track record that a lot of these men have is A, they either have a past history with Hugh or at least with the AFC North in some way, shape, or form, so they know what this division is about and what it takes to compete and win in the division. And B, if they don't have a connection to the AFC North, they come from some type of physicality background, meaning Hal Hunter and where he's been and the physicality that, you know, that he's coached that I kind of saw firsthand in San Diego, carry that over the best he could to Indianapolis. But Kirby Wilson with Adrian Peterson, there's no way Adrian Peterson leads the league in rushing year after year if you don't have physicality, you know, in the running game and in the game plan from the offensive, because the offensive line there in Minnesota hasn't been oh so great since, you know, Hutchinson kind of stepped away and they've been kind of meandering their way. But somehow, some way, you know, Adrian Peterson, because of the talent that he has, but because of the game planning that they have, has been so great.
Yeah, and Wilson was the running back coach in Pittsburgh from 2007 to 2013.
There you go.
And again, that's a plug-and-play system where obviously the coach has a lot to do with getting the backs ready. You know, Pittsburgh never misses a beat when a guy goes down. They just boom, 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 next guy up.
And you know what I want to see is some of the concepts and the integration offensively in the run game. And I think someone that you have specifically not only working with the running backs, but working with the coordination, you know, of the run game and having, as we talk about, a seat at the table when that game plan is being prepared. Kirby Wilson's report is, you know, Hugh Jackson's going to weigh heavily on what Kirby Wilson sees, thinks we can take advantage of, and that, and the play calling is going to coincide with what Kirby Wilson thinks we can accomplish. And I want to see some of that. And we know we've already said Hugh's that power run game, but I just love some of the innovation that I see out of the Steelers and the way they use Le'Veon Bell, the pulling, the misdirection, all those types of thing. And because Ben Roethlisberger, you know, is not the most athletic individual, so everything doesn't have to be zone scheme, zone scheme, zone scheme, zone scheme, because if you're not that great at the zone scheme, you struggle. But then you're caught between a rock and a hard place. You're not physical. You're not overly physical, so you can't be a power run team.
Oh, we're going to be
and
a power
not,
run
and
team.
You're not so good at running the zone scheme.
We're stuck right in the middle. We're going
to
be a power run team.
But we
team.
Need right. to get some receivers that could block also. I heard an interesting interview, or Chris Carter
That's
was
how
talking
you get
about
big runs.
Chris Carter was talking about it this morning, and he was talking about when he learned a lot of offense from Brian Billick. And he would say that Brian Billick would say, you know, who do you think we have a better chance of running the ball with, Chris, a three wide receiver set with you blocking a nickelback, or to go with a tight end and have that tight end blocking an outside linebacker? And
for sure, three receivers.
Right. And so, and he was saying, he was equating that to this weekend. He thought that Arizona, while it's tough to run against Carolina, might have a better chance spreading it out, taking three receivers because how good
Fitz.
Of a blocker Fitz is.
And Floyd.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think one reason that maybe our running game struggled a little bit, I mean, when you have 5'2" guys on the outside, I mean, they may fly and they may catch the ball well, but they're not blocking anybody.
Well, and think about Larry Fitzgerald's playing the slot. Hines Ward, go back to those Pittsburgh Steelers teams that ran the ball so effectively. You had Hines Ward blocking
it.
Out
and
of the slot.
Did. And Hines Ward will come in and he'll put his helmet in your ear hole.
Yeah,
and he'll crack you. He'll crack an outside linebacker. He'll crack an inside linebacker. He'll get up on a safety. And in some cases, it's not overly big like Fitz and Floyd. It's the heart and their willingness to know that I play a role that if Crow pops a 6-yard run and we block it up the way we saw it on film, that my block can take that 6-yard run and make it a 16 or a 60-yard run.
And Andrew Hawkins has all the heart in the world.
Sure.
If you watch him on tape, he gives
I'm
everything.
I'm not talking about our little guys. I'm talking about in general.
He just doesn't have the size there. So this is an experienced staff, and I think that it's a staff that has been in demand in the National Football League for a long period of time. You look right now at the staff from the Browns. Aaron Glenn has a job from the defensive side of the football. Anthony Weaver has a job from the defensive
Angelico
side of the
got
football.
Hired.
Angelico is going to get hired as tight ends coach, and we know – I bet Wilbur Montgomery will land somewhere, and we know Flip is the quarterback's coach
Correct.
In Philadelphia. It's a difference. Just a totally different staff in terms of experience and what they're bringing to the
table. I mean, I know that we sugarcoated it and made it seem like a sundae with the cherry on top, but when you get your fifth choice is getting the fifth choice of coaches that were out there, and I think that really showed through with the last staff.
Did too, and I think he also brought in a lot of people that were, you know, had been with him for a long time that weren't necessarily NFL coaches. And I think that you know, at some point it rears its head. This is a staff of NFL professional coaches, and we will see how that plays out. But just being able to talk to Al Saunders, I mean, when we had him in here at Wilhelm the last couple days, he came in here. He went to the same high school as my dad. We ended up having, like, some Bay Area connection. Just a great guy who just knows the game and has been around everybody in the game.
And, again, this is a guy that's been in the game for 30-plus years. It's not boring to him. And I would think that the energy and the purpose that he's been walking around the building with, that he's, you know, kind of shined through on Nathan and I, coincides with what Hugh Jackson's trying to find, is guys that don't just want to come to work. They want to come to work for the Cleveland Browns because the state of the Cleveland Browns is so bad that they're not intimidated by the work ahead.
Not at all. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850 on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Your thoughts to the hires for the Cleveland Browns. Also, call your shot for championship weekend. We got the Friday forecast still to come. And you know what, my friend? We also have, I found some cool facts from Peter Schrager, our good friend at Fox Sports, about Brady Manning, the matchup. Some interesting stuff. We'll talk about that when we return.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wilhelm, is this one your nomination, your first one?
It's one of my nominations, okay? I just think it's got a little build.
I like it.
As does, you know, our Flo Rida open. So this is Fall Out Boy, Century's Final.
First song nominee is Fall Out Boy.
Yeah.
Are we letting the fans decide?
We're just putting it out there. We'll see.
We're going to take a conglomerate.
Sashi's giving us sound. He's giving us a song nomination as well.
So yeah, Fall Out Boy, Century's Final. And again, if you remember, it was used. I don't think it, the 2000 and which would have been 2014 college football playoffs. It was like the lead for that.
All right.
And I just know that every time I heard it, got me hyped to watch Ohio State, knowing that they were in it. And I just thought, again, it was a little, you know, little build, and then it drops the beat, and it's, you know, got a good premise behind it.
There's a groundswell for Sanford and Son, though.
I actually, you have,
a fan of one.
Do you know who shot that down without question?
I heard Sasha Brown did not like it.
Sasha Brown.
Well, listen, we don't need him worrying about the song, so we're going to discard that vote.
All right, talking about this staff. Gibbs, what do you think? What do you think of this staff, and how do you compare it to recent staffs here with the Cleveland Browns?
I'm fine with the staff. I thought it was fine. It still bothers me that Hugh's going to call his own plays, but we'll see how that shakes out.
Why?
Where has it been successful?
Well, Gibbs. Okay, let's do it. We'll play. Guess the numbers with Jason Gibbs. How many head coaches in the NFL this year called their own plays on offense?
I'm going to say 5.
8 is the number.
I'm relatively close. It's not embarrassing to today so far.
Okay. Of those 8, how many made the playoffs in 2015?
I'm going to say...
If you watch the Browns huddle on cleanbrowns.com and the Browns mobile app, you know the answer to this.
Sorry, I missed it last week.
It's on every single day.
I'm going to say 3.
6.
Really?
The only two
I didn't know that.
The only two that missed the playoffs were Chip Kelly and Sean Payton.
Sean Payton's a darn fine coach.
How many of the teams that are left in the NFL right now have a head coach that calls the plays on offense of the final 4?
2.
Bruce and Gary. 50%. Yeah. Ain't bad.
So Bruce
Kubiak's not a good play caller.
Bruce Arians, Gary Kubiak, Jay Gruden, who made the playoffs this year as well, Mike McCarthy, who
I'm
made the playoffs.
I'm glad I'm being proven wrong on that.
Yeah, no, it's actually it's
always
a
worry to me because I feel like it takes away from everything else you're trying to do as
Bill O'Brien and Andy Reid.
I had the Andy Reid one.
Yeah, and I'm missing one still, right? Arians, McCarthy, Gruden, Bill O'Brien, Andy Reid.
Sean Payton.
No, he didn't make the playoffs.
No. Oh, he's making the playoffs. Oh.
And Kubiak.
Yeah.
Is that 8?
6. 6 that made it.
6.
Chip Kelly and Sean Payton didn't make it. And Sean offense certainly wasn't the problem
with
Sean
Payton.
You know
what? You could see the excitement that Hugh talked about during his press conference about calling plays. Yeah, and it's like you want someone that doesn't shy away from not only being a head coach, but his ability to call the plays and the right plays more often than not. But secondly, and I think as you made in the first segment, Nathan, his ability to put together a staff that he trusts around him to take care of some of the responsibilities that a head coach would have to take care of if he were not calling the plays.
Even our boy Tony Grossi, somebody said, ask Grossi on Twitter, can the vast degree of difference in experience between this and the last coaching staff be overstated? And Grossi said, no, it cannot be. It can't be. I think it's a completely different staff. It feels like a completely different ball game. I mean, you have more. I think Al Saunders had more experience by himself than our entire last coaching
staff. I
agree.
See, I believe that to be true.
There's two guys that stand out to me. One, I love Kirby Wilson.
Yep.
And the job that he's done wherever he's been.
Yep.
Highly successful, and I think that can only help your running game. Hal Hunter, a guy that stands out to me because really
– no love for Al Saunders?
And I was talking to Grossi about Hal Hunter. His father was the offensive line coach in 89 for the Browns.
Correct.
Brett Carson.
Correct.
You know, Hunter, he's been around the block. And I think – I just think you can't understate the importance of an offensive line coach. I mean, we can say what we want to about what happened with our former offensive line coach, before
I think it
the
hurt
season
this
started,
team.
But I think it set this team back.
I think it hurt
back.
This team.
And I think if you have a good offensive line coach, it can change things. He might be the most important coach on the offense outside of the coordinator.
Which there is, and there isn't one.
Correct.
What about Al Sanders? That doesn't have you fired up?
Yeah.
Guy's great. We'll guy's a genius.
There you go. Is he the one that told you 64% chance?
I can't reveal my sources.
Yeah. Okay.
64% chance of what?
He saw he admired
some pipe dream some coach put in his head yesterday.
He admires he watches Wilhelm and I toss the pill around.
Oh God.
And he came in here, he admired it. And
he'd also admire someone's helmet going into your chest and you'd being carted off.
Nobody's saying I'm surviving. In fact, I think the most likely scenario is after one play, I'm carted off. And I just hope that I complete a pass for 10 yards and I can give the thumbs up while I'm going off. We brought up Sashi Brown was into it. I felt like he offered me a contract yesterday, Wilhelm. Did you think that?
No, I didn't.
It sounded like that. He said,
not at
you
all.
For quarterback?
No.
I thought it sounded
not to me.
No,
similar.
Not at
we
all.
Hear different things. People hear what they want to hear.
They
Wilhelm.
Do. This is true.
Yeah,
we do know that.
People hear what they want to hear. 216-578-0850. 216-578-0850. Dan in Cleveland wants to talk about the new Browns coaching staff. Dan, your thoughts.
Hi. After analyzing this whole staff, I've been watching the Browns since all the way back even when Paul Brown was still coach. And this is, without a doubt, just on paper, I know we haven't played any games yet, but on paper, this staff is the most experienced and qualified staff since the staff of Blanton Collier, without question. When you go into a ball game, this is going to be a whole different game. As a football player, you want to feel like you got an edge. With these people, the Browns are going to have that edge. That's my comment.
Thank you very much for the call, and we certainly hope it is, because at the end of the day, not only talent is important, the coach setting the vision is important and motivating the players, but having that experience and the game plans have become such a huge part of success week to week in the NFL. To have a coaching staff with such experience can't be anything but a plus, because they've all been successful. Al Saunders has been a successful offensive coordinator. Hugh Jackson has been a successful offensive coordinator. And Pep Hamilton has been a successful offensive coordinator.
Right. And I think to me, what's going to be very telling, you know, you and I getting close to some players, you know, both, you know, in the building and outside the building, we can talk about the resume. They could come in here and talk about what they're doing to prep for when the players come back. But the real question is that I want to find out is maybe Tua Joe Thomas that has seen multiple staffs or some of the young players that really believed in last year's staff, and how different some of those first meetings and practices are being executed in the meetings and how they're being held and the tone with which the messages and the game plan and what we're trying to do here are being communicated. Instead of just telling you, you know, or, you know, and you listening, it's like you are hearing what they're saying and you are taking it in. And I think it's going to be a wake up call for a lot of guys that, you know, might have gotten caught up thinking this is easy. You know, if every week, every year is going to be like last year.
I'd be excited to get to go to work and turn this thing around.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised with how quickly guys get comfortable and the shock that will come with walking in 30 seconds late. I'm going to take your money, you know, or you're going to run. You know, when that the last staff that might have been okay. And I've even had that conversation, you know, with a couple guys here in the building is when you're winning. Walk in 30 seconds late. Do your job. You know, do your job. You know, get out, execute it on the practice field. Just don't let it happen tomorrow, because the young players are always watching the older players. It's little things like that that when you let them go, you know, now that when you're rebuilding, everything is going to be under a microscope.
Yes, indeed it is. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Plus some tweets. Our guy Gary in Youngstown says, Fallout Boy, when did Wilhelm start working at Hot Topic as a second job?
You didn't read like the
what
seven,
does that
seven
mean?
Other good ones around it. Of course you picked that one.
No, there was Horton Hears a Who. There was a Love It. There was John Keefe said, boo, please don't. That band sucks. Somebody said, there was something like it. I like it. Guy way better than the first song of Nathan's. There
Ryan
you go.
Ryan Hersick says ESPN destroyed that song during college football this past year.
Right,
so.
They did.
Toby Lake says, terrible and overused, way too cliche. Behind Enemy Lines, G.I. George says, I don't know who that was, and I don't know music, but I liked it. Good choice.
Let me just, Troy Harden says, I like it. Guys, way better than the first song of Nathan's.
I read that one already. Thank you, Gibbs.
Wait, what did he say again, Nathan?
What was the second part? Guys, way better than the first song of Nathan's. Okay. Thanks, Troy.
I've reached out to my musical consultant since I'm not a music expert, but I've got someone. I'm going to be coming with another nominee in addition to Sanford and Son.
Okay. All right. So when's the goal to have a song? By the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl.
Yeah, sure. No, how about, I mean,
I think we debut it
the week of Super Bowl.
I think we
because we got 2 weeks then.
I think we debut it the day after the Super Bowl.
I would
agree. Season ends.
It's fine.
The new season
new
begins.
League year.
It's a new year.
Sure, it's fine.
Yes.
We got time. What, you got five seats at the table. I got five picks at the table. Kids got two. Gibbs got two. Sashi's got two. We'll have to get Hugh to get at least one, right?
We'll reach out to Hugh's people.
Yeah.
I want Al Saunders to throw in a nomination.
Come on,
I think we might get something sweet
Al
from
Saunders
the doors.
Al Saunders is the new Sashi Brown.
We could get a Grateful Dead. From him, from the Bay Area. He's a new Sashi Brown. But he's the older Sashi Brown. So Hughes Cleve says, you and Wilhelm tossing the pillow around? Sounds like Zoolander. Hashtag Blue Steel. That's great. We're going to have a crazy gasoline fight later. All right, we'll be back with more CBD on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Here's one. Dustin Puritan says the theme song for this show should be Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue because CBD is the only show on ESPN Cleveland that makes you feel good about the Browns.
I second that.
Or good in life.
I was just going to say,
he's the one to call it Dr. Feelgood.
Take out the part against about right. The Browns. The only, well,
oh, leave it there, kid. Leave it there. Gibbs, what do you think about the Crew?
I think it's old.
It is old.
All right, yeah. I'm going to throw out my musical consultants just gave me a couple of recommendations.
Okay.
And albeit I'm not that familiar with these, but the first one is Rage Against the Machine, Killing in the Name.
Uh-huh. I like that.
Killing in the Name. And Dr. Dre, The Next Episode.
Like that too.
Hold up.
All of a sudden, my musical skills rose up from the ash.
Well, you go to
I don't know about that.
For that.
Can you give me like the chorus of either of those songs?
Listen, sometimes it's about delegating.
You're an idea man.
It's like
collaboration, right?
Exactly. I'm collaborating with experts.
Yeah. It's like on a golf trip when
you know what?
You come up with the idea to play golf and have somebody book
the tee
time.
Since we're doing a football show, and I mean, I know you brought up the word collaboration. I want to read something that I was reading this morning. About something that happened with the Carolina Panthers when Ron Rivera, you know, ended up going 1-2. They had hired the new, you know, Gettleman, the general manager,
yes,
and so on
please.
And so forth. And I kind of screenshotted this article that you can find on ProFootballTalk.com, and it just talks about, you know, a general manager and a head coach, newly hired general manager and a head coach who essentially started the season 1-2 and things weren't all going that great. And it goes as follows. It says, we talked and I said, Ron, this is what I expect and the way I want to approach this, meaning their relationship. It's going to be collaborative. We're going to find players that fit your schemes. I'm going to listen to the coaches and everybody on the scouting staff, Gettleman said. It doesn't mean I'm always going to do what you want, but I will listen and take everything in. I expect that in return, it's a two-way street now. You've got to understand that if I say no, I'll explain why, but understand that it's going to be a firm no. So this is 2013. This is a team now that has won 19 of the last 20 regular season football games, probably in and around that conversation, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the key thing that popped out to me was collaborative. Collaborative. A new regime comes in, right? Pitches collaboration to Ron Rivera, who's won a Super Bowl, been a defensive coordinator with the Chicago Bears, my linebacker coach in San Diego, has done a good job in Carolina and has now since done a great job just simply probably by being reassured that he was, you know, going to have a job with the Carolina Panthers, that he was going to see through. And Gettleman goes on to talk about how, you know, he literally went up to Ron Rivera and said that the reports that I'm looking for other coaches and that I'm going to fire you if things don't turn around very quickly, that they are completely false. And my point is that when you get individuals in this business on the same page, working in collaboration towards a purpose like winning football games and winning a lot of football games and now potentially competing, you know, for the George Halas Trophy or the Vince Lombardi Trophy and so on, or the Lamar Hunt Trophy. It works. When you get people on the same page and grown men can communicate, things happen in a very good way.
Well, and that's basically what we're here. We'll see how it works in practice, but that's the goal here, alignment and trying to go ahead and get everybody on the same page working together. And I think that's the situation where you're going to have. Sasha ultimately is going to make a lot of decisions, but Hugh's going to have plenty of output input, and I think it'll be a two-way street. And when he says no, it's no. When he says yes, it's yes. And that's the goal. That's the
right.
goal. And that's a great model for a franchise at that point was struggling.
Correct.
And has now been able to turn it around.
To get them over the
that.
Hump. They've you know, been doing I know our process is extremely different. I'm not trying to compare apples to apples. All I'm saying is
sure.
they were a lost franchise at that moment, you know, with seemingly potentially losing their head coach, new regime, who's going to bring in his plan to accumulate talent, whether via free agency or via the draft. And they were forced to mesh. And since that point, once they were on the same page, collaborative working together, good things have happened.
And the one thing that they had also was a franchise quarterback in Cam Newton.
They
and
did.
So when the Browns get that plus collaboration should lead to success in the NFL. It seems to do that for most places. Let's go to Steve and Avon now. Steve, welcome.
Steve.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I think on the coaching hiring, I think, you know, the experience they have in the NFL is the biggest plus, you know, at the beginning. Because, I mean, ultimately they're going to have to prove they can do it. But I think in the beginning, you know, the guys in the locker room can, you know, fall back on that. You know, they've been coaches. They've had success. I mean, yes, they're going to have to prove it. But I think just in the initial, you know, beginning of it, they'll fall back on that. And I wanted to ask you, because you were talking about Ray Horton's, like, you know, his points and yards. And I was always like, now the NFL rates them by yardage, total defense.
Yep.
But they go by yardage. Now, I was always like, oh, why would they do that? You go by points. But over the years, I've seen that, you know, I think yardage is a better way. And I'd like to get your opinion, because if your team turns the ball over, you know, pick six, that goes against your defense. Or if your team turns it over, you know, on your own 20 and a team scores, it's tough. So I do think yards is a better barometer for a defense than points.
Well, it's interesting because in that case, both of those cases, you would be giving up points but not yards. Matt, as a guy who's played in the league, what did you think was a better measure of your defense? How many points you gave up or how many yards you gave up?
How many points you gave up?
Absolutely.
I would think so.
I mean, come on. There's guys like Belichick that sometimes their scheme is – give up yards, give up yards, give up yards, bend but don't break. It's points. The game is not measured. You don't win the game because you have more yards. You
right.
win the game because you have more points.
I think maybe the best stat would be
points.
Points per play.
Points.
Well, yeah, it is points, but there's a way. That's a way to break it down and take away something that's going on. Or you could look at yards per point would be an interesting study.
Points.
Yeah, interesting study, but it's...
I wonder what the correlation is.
You know what? Sometimes if you're on part of a team and your team turns it over on the 20-yard line, you have to Matt Wilhelm has to pick up the quarterback named Nathan Zagura that threw the pick, the awful pick, and gave the team the ball on the 20-yard line, and he's got to come in and hold them to a field goal.
There's a couple things that kind of go into, you know, why a team, you know, doesn't give up a lot of points, and here's just a few. Is A, you've got to be a great red zone defense.
Yep.
Great. I'm talking great red zone defenses give up field goals. And in some cases, if they can force you to go backwards and kick a long field goal and you miss the field goal, so that ends up at no points. The other thing that a lot of people don't really, you know, again, don't see. I mean, I know there's a stat for everything, but is your ability after a turnover, your team just gives the ball away. It's not just your ability to go get the ball back. You know, okay, there's a stat for that. But it's your ability to stall that next drive because that team has just stolen the momentum
yes.
on a takeaway. Maybe there's a return on a fumble, on an interception, or maybe it's just, you know, in plus territory, a turnover. It's your ability to get off the field and limit them to a field goal or less. Because the momentum has totally shifted. You have just gone off the bench cold. Chilling, looking at, you know, your Surface tablet or, in my day, you know, the printouts, right, to putting your helmet on, running on the defense, and going to execute against a team that you may have the lead, may not, it might be tied, but has all the momentum. And you go out there and stall that drive. You have stolen everything they just gained via turnover back from them by allowing them to not put a drive together and essentially not have it end up in a touchdown.
I think you're exactly right, and I think there are ways to kind of measure this. Obviously, you talked about red zone defense is certainly important. I think third down defense is important.
Third down defense, I think, is huge.
Huge. Yards per play, I think, is an important stat. And I bet if we break – I'm going to do this. I'm going to put it into a spreadsheet. Yards per play and points per play. And I bet there's going to be a strong correlation between those two stats, between the good defenses and the bad defenses.
Yards per play, more so than – what you say? Points per yard?
Points per play.
Points per play. Yards per play is in defensive conversations, but they don't hang their hat on that. Okay. I would say I know the defenses that I've been a part of, especially Wade Phillips' conversation he's having right now is yards per rush.
Okay.
Yards per rush. We limit them to, 3.3 yards or less.
Sure.
Times the number of times they want to make an attempt. That means keeping them below 100 yards rushing, odds are good you're going to win the football game.
As a Patriots fan, I hope he's worried about yards per rush tomorrow or
right.
Sunday.
Sure.
Absolutely.
It's that right. Internal rush.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look at that. We'll see what the correlation is between the best defenses in 2016, yards per play and points per play, and see if there is anything to it. Because I think total yards is a misnomer, because you could have an offense that's just not on the field a lot, so you could give up more yards. You're on the field more, or you could have a defense that doesn't give up as many yards because your offense
from behind
dominates ball control.
Yeah, playing from behind late in the game.
Right.
Sure.
So we'll take a look at that. Yards per play, I think, is an interesting one. Points per play, we'll see how that shakes out. When we return on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Zagura Kid Wilhelm. Do we have any calls right now, Gibbs?
Yeah, right. Jerry and Erie.
All right, let's get to our guy. We'll get the call, and then I found some stuff out. All right, let's go to Jerry and Erie. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I have a question to ask you guys about your opinion on two of our coaches that we just picked up. The one I already knew was Ray Horton, and another one being Hamilton. But I hadn't heard of him before, so I went online and I looked him up and found out that he was fired. Pep Hamilton was just fired in November by the Colts.
In the middle of the season.
And then I Googled him why, and they said he just wasn't helping the Colts out much. Colts were utilizing his personnel correctly and wasn't giving the Colts much of an advantage and some confusing calls. So the other thing, I know that some coaches, just as players, can be with one team and not do so well, and they can go to another team and be great. So I guess my question is, do you think these two people, Hamilton and Horton, are good picks?
Yeah, well, Hamilton, I mean, the year before, they set franchise records. Yeah, they were great the year before. Last year, Indianapolis was in disarray, and a little-known fact also was that there were some problems with Pep Hamilton was more the GM's guy in Indianapolis than he was the head coach's guy. So he was going to be the scapegoat when something went wrong. And I think that's sort of what happened there. I'll let you speak to Ray Horton a bit.
We'll find out. Ray Horton, when the Browns signed Ray Horton back in 2013, he was considered the hottest coordinator, was supposed to be a head coach. He had done a great job in Arizona, came here, improved our defense that one year, at least in that category of total defense, went to Tennessee, and in 2 years took them from 27th, I think, to 12th in total defense. I'll be interested to see how he does. I know he had a great pedigree when he was in Arizona. He was thought very highly. It was very well-regarded. People thought he was going to be a head coach. So if he can recapture some of that magic, I'm all for it. Pep Hamilton and the role that he's in working with the quarterbacks I think is great. He's worked with some great coaches. I think Pep Hamilton got a bad rap this year in Indy. Luck got hurt. That team kind of fell apart, and they tried
to blame
it.
Somebody had to be the fall guy.
They blamed it on him, and I think that was a little bit ridiculous. The 2 years that he was a full-time offensive coordinator for Indy with a healthy Andrew Luck, they won the division title, and they set franchise records for offensive production. So I think getting him in a role where he's not calling plays but is going to be helping this team is going to be a very, very good role for him. So here, guys, we looked at defense, right? And we were talking about that and what it means. So what I did was I ranked every defense in the NFL this year by yards per play and points per play. And then I added those two things together to give what I would call a total defense efficiency rank. And here's what it spit out. So maybe there's something to it. Number one, Denver. Number two, Carolina. Number three, Seattle. Number four, Kansas City. Number five, the Bengals. Number six, the Jets. Number seven, the Patriots. Number eight, the Texans. Number nine, Minnesota. Number 10, Arizona.
Now contrast.
So the only non-playoff team were the New York Jets, and they were 10-6.
Contrast that with the what the total the rankings that you were quoting before.
Okay, so in the other one, for example, Tennessee in that in total defense with yards was 12th. That's what you talk. Ray Horton, they were 12th ranked defense. By this way, they were 24th in the NFL. Eesh. Okay, and you go and go for the bottom ones. New Orleans Saints 32. Cleveland Browns 31, San Diego 30, Giants 29, Bears 28, Redskins 27, Colts 26, Lions 25, Titans 24. So there actually is a pretty good correlate. I mean, those two stats together gave you the 10 best defenses in the NFL.
The only thing that surprises me there on the bottom ones is I thought the Lions had a little bit better defense.
No. Second half of the year they struggled. They finished 25th on the season in yards per in points per play and 24th in yards per play. The only teams that were like the only surprise, nobody in the top 10, by the way, of the teams that I listed, the Cardinals were the highest in either category, 13th in points per play, 8th in yards per play. Nobody else was worse than that in either of the two categories. And you had the Broncos 3rd in points, 1st in yards, Carolina 4th in points, 2nd in yards, Seattle 5th in points, 3rd in yards, Kansas City 2nd in points, 6th in yards, Cincy number 1 in points per play, number 10 in yards per play, Jets 10th in points per play, 4th in yards per play.
So this we got actually, a new defensive ranking. Get rid of the other one. I don't want to hear what ranking.
I think that's the new ranking. I think that's the new ranking.
Send yards, it to New York. Let's go.
Yards per play plus points per play gives you a pretty darn good defensive ranking there. Gibbs, what do you think about that? Is that some analytics for you?
I was sleeping. What? I got your numbers.
But that seems to be a much better thing than just saying, oh, they're the 12th defense because they were good in yards. I don't think that tells the whole story.
Yeah, I would agree.
I bet if you factored in third down percent too as a third category, it would probably make it even more foolproof there for you.
How many games would this team have won if Ray Horton was the D coordinator this past year?
How many more?
Yeah. I'm not saying it. If the defense is middle of the pack.
Well, we would have given up 0.6 yards per play less. So that adds up. If the D was middle of the pack, points per play, let's see. Tennessee gave up last year 0.42, we give up 0.43, so not a huge difference there. I think we would have been a better defense. I think
agree.
Any scheme in the NFL would have been better than what we did last year.
It seemed to be
like
nonsense.
I almost think if you were our defensive coordinator last year, Kia, we would have done.
Oh, for sure.
For sure, if Matt Wilhelm was our defensive coordinator, we would have done a better
job. If Wilhelm was the defensive coordinator and I was given the fired up speech at the beginning, recipe for success in my estimation.
That's good, the kid. That is good. Gibbs, what do you think about that? That's pretty strong.
That's a hot take.
That is flaming hot.
Stugatz would be proud.
The Stugatz could be proud of that one. It is so hot. 216-578-0850. Give your hot takes. Are you excited about this staff? I'm excited to see as the defensive staff comes together, we'll see what happens there. But people are saying it's easy to say this. This coaching staff is already better than the past 10 years for the Browns. I'm getting optimistic. I think people are starting to get a little bit optimistic. James Baker writes, and the kid, I know you have a hot take on this, any insight you could give on Browns running back Terrell Watson? That was the other news yesterday. The Browns signed Watson off of the practice squad of Cincinnati, which tells me Hugh Jackson likes him.
Friend of the program, Cleve T.A.,
sent
me an article talking about his numbers, and this is true analytics, a little bit above my head, but his numbers for his production in college, small school or big school, I think he went to Azusa Pacific.
Azusa.
His numbers match up very well with very, very productive NFL players. And there's an article, I'll send it over to you so you can send it out to your minions, that touches on this in great detail. But that coupled with the fact that Hugh Jackson has seen him on the practice squad, I think Cleve T.A. is expecting him to be in the Pro Bowl next year.
So 6'1", 240 pounds at Azusa Pacific, where he set numerous Division II records, led all of college football with 2,153 rushing yards in 2014, finished his collegiate career with 4,756 yards and 78 touchdowns. 6'1", 240.
He's a beast.
That's a huge man.
Yeah, I'm looking for the article right now.
6'1", 240. So that's who he is. Again, he was on the Bengals practice squad. And when Hugh Jackson brings him here, that says to me, Hugh liked him. Otherwise,
oh, no doubt.
There's no reason for it
there's
to happen.
No doubt.
So that gives you some optimism. And, you know, he likes to pound that football with the power game. Maybe some Isaiah Crowell mixing with some Terrell Randy Watson. Gibbs, can I get a Watson from you?
Randy Watson.
Yes, indeed. All right, that'll do it for our first hour. Hour number two, we'll turn our attention to the championship games. We will go ahead and rank the quarterbacks left in the playoffs. I think that is going to be a fun exercise. Take your calls and tweets. We got the Friday forecast, and, of course, we'll call the games. Zagura plus three with three to go.
Ooh, yeah, the prime rib. Yeah, make it medium rare and give me the haju. Yeah, I'm going to take a bath in it with some lobster and some king crab. And you're going to pay for it, kid. And you will too, Matt Wilhelm. Yeah, it's going to be a macho man feast.
Did we say we're going to the ground round?
The ground round? No. No ground round. Winner's choice. Champion's prerogative. Yeah.
I thought that we already said Ken Stewart's.
That was what you said. That's what you said, the kid. You said Ken Stewart's. Yeah, out in Akron. We'll get a driver. Maybe we'll do it. Maybe we won't. I don't know. Changed my mind. Yeah, it does sound good. Yeah, it sure does. Hour number two of Cleveland Browns Daily. Right after this, it's going to be macho.